Support for this program by Fairbanks, Alaska, the Golden Heart City. Go see a Gold Panthers game. Visit downtown art galleries or drive out to Chena Hot Springs. Exploring your home state is the COVID-safe way to enjoy the summer.
Welcome to Native America Calling. In Anchorage, I'm Alyssa Yakyadi London. It takes a strong woman to represent her culture on stage. Whether it's a contest at a tribal fair or the Miss Universe pageant, wearing the crown is a major achievement that carries immense public responsibility, and just getting there takes vision, focus, and commitment. Coming up, we'll talk with some of the strong women who have been there through the ups and downs of pageant competition, putting yourself out there in life after passing on the title. We're back right after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Schools on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota are under a quarantine order. The Oglala Sioux Tribe issued the order Tuesday, citing an increase of positive COVID-19 cases, the rise of the Delta variant, the number of students under 12 not eligible for a vaccine, and the number of homes with multi-generational families. Vice President Alicia Mosso provided an update on social media Tuesday night, saying the tribe is not on lockdown, but the order is a temporary way to try and slow the spread of COVID-19.
Please don't go to work. Please don't go to school. This is part of it. Why we're having this current school quarantine order is because a lot of these cases are in our schools. And in order for us to get ahead of the spread, in any public health emergency, you need to contact trace so we can stop the spread. Unfortunately, it's getting to be a little bit much, and there's a lot of schools, and we know they all have their plans, but we are going to work with those schools on their plans as we move forward. The tribe has had some ordinances in place for a very long time, which is some of those ordinances that I placed along with the school quarantine order, so you can reference those. We can quarantine buildings, so that is the official action that happened today.
The order was issued after 21 new cases were reported in one day. The 10-day quarantine order goes into effect Wednesday. The tribe is under orange risk while it continues with a number of COVID-19 safety guidelines for the reservation. The Globe and Mail reports federal fisheries officers in Nova Scotia, Canada, have been removed from water where Mi'kmaq fishers are harvesting lobster. The move follows confrontations last week between officers and Indigenous people. Videos of confrontations are circulating on social media. The harvest is outside of the federally regulated season. Indigenous people say it's their treaty right to live off the resources. Assembly of First Nations National Chief Roseanne Archibald is supporting Indigenous fishing communities. She traveled to the area last week and witnessed firsthand the federal enforcement actions. In a press conference streamed live by APTN National News, Archibald says First Nations sovereignty and jurisdictions need to be respected.
The AFN stands with you as you exercise your treaty rights to operate commercial lobster fisheries. Conflict is a legacy in which Canada has offered apologies and promises. It's time for these promises to be made concrete through commitments to recognize, respect, and promote First Nations rights, while at the same time providing justice for First Nations citizens who are both working within the Canadian legal framework and who are forging ahead with their own laws and processes.
Indigenous people say their traps and lobsters are being seized. There are also reports of arrests. Treaty rights and fisheries issues are being raised as the Canadian federal election takes place next week. A number of tribes and Native organizations are calling on the Biden administration to protect gray wolves. The Associated Press reports a letter was sent this week to Secretary of the Interior Deb Haaland seeking an emergency petition claiming states have become too aggressive in hunting. Tribes and organizations from the Northwest, Southwest, Great Plains, and Rocky Mountains were among those to sign the letter. Congressman Raul Grijalva recently introduced a bill to require the Department of Health and Human Services to confer with urban Indian organizations on policies and initiatives for Native people living in urban areas. The Indian Health Service is currently the only one required to confer with IOUs. The Urban Indian Health Confer Act is intended to help improve health care for American Indian and Alaska Native people living and seeking care in urban areas outside of IHS. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Come Unity, Environment is Sacred is a series of on-demand films portraying a Native revolution to environmentally align with nature in celebration of International Earth Day. Available through April 30th at visionmakermedia.org who support this show. Support by AARP. The Native Urban Elder Needs Assessment Survey will provide data to improve urban Indian elder health equity. Elders are underrepresented in data, and you can help. Info and survey at uiacoalition.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
Welcome to Native America Calling. I'm Alyssa London. Even with all the canceled tribal fairs, parades, and powwows, the summer tradition of choosing Native royalty is hanging on. Native women all over the country are showing off their talents and expressing their cultural pride for a chance to represent themselves and their tribes to the broader public. Some women will go on to even larger forums and compete in front of a global audience, bringing their Native roots with them. And let me tell you, it's hard work, and win or lose, the work doesn't end when the competition does. Native women, there's the added responsibility of respecting our culture and educating others about it in an appropriate way. We're going to get the inside story today from a number of women who have been there, and we want to hear from you. Join our conversation by calling 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. I'm super excited to introduce our first guest today, Triana Brown. She is the former Miss Oklahoma America, former Miss Oklahoma USA, and a Miss USA second runner-up. And she's Chickasaw. Welcome to Native America Calling, Triana.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. Now, can you tell our audience what got you started in pageantry?
I was in college. My family had already been struggling after my mom lost her job, and I was told that I was going to have to leave college because we couldn't afford it. So one day, walking around the university, I saw an ad for a pageant, and it was going to be like $1,200 if you won. So I called my mom, told her that I was going to compete in a pageant, and that's when my journey started. It all started just because I wanted to stay in school. I was also a D1 collegiate track runner as well, so I had accomplished all those goals and just couldn't leave school. It was my dream college, and the next thing I knew, I was at Miss Oklahoma and was on my way to Miss America.
That's incredible. What was some of the training that went into preparing for Miss Oklahoma and then ultimately Miss America?
Oh, wow. It was the hardest thing I had probably gone through at that time. I was what they called a jock. So they had to teach me how to walk in heels. They had to teach me how to speak on stage. They had to teach me all about platforms and how you do community service work that promotes your brand and gets people talking. So there were lots of nights where I was just crying because I was used to training on the track, you know? And then the next thing I knew was I was in classes for hair and makeup and speech classes and etiquette classes and learning how to take criticism without taking it to heart, you know, because they just wanted me to do well on stage. And in the meanwhile, having to remain myself and not let anybody change me. So it was pretty difficult, but in the long run, it was incredibly beneficial.
How has that training positively impacted other areas of your life?
Well, I would say learning how to remain myself around a whole bunch of people who want to see probably something else is something that I think most women should have some type of experience in. You know, we're in a society that just wants to mold you into what they think is the perfect woman, but really the perfect woman doesn't exist. You know, that perfect woman is when you are completely yourself and confident in that too. So being involved in TV and film, you're around an entire industry that just wants to mold you into all these different types of people, you know. But you have to be able to walk into a room and be like, okay, my name is Triana Brown. These are my morals. These are my beliefs, and I'm going to stick to it. I'm here for a job. You know, I'm here to do that job, and I'm here to create magic, basically.
So pageantry has helped you a lot. And for people that may not understand how it is applicable to other areas of your life, how would you dispel some of their misconceptions?
I would say watch pageants. You know, don't just watch one, watch a multitude of them. Have conversations with women who compete in pageants, because when you do, you'll see that they're incredibly intelligent, very confident. They have stories to tell. They've had difficult times that have molded them into who they are in that moment, you know, and to really just take the time to understand rather than just listen to the stereotypes, I guess you could say. Because at one point before I did pageants, you know, I'm not afraid to say that I would look at pageant women and be like, oh, wow, they're just perfect. Their lives are perfect. They have everything handed to them. And it wasn't until I got involved in pageants that I went, whew, man, okay. How do these women know everything about the news? How do they have opinions about them that won't, you know, offend one or the other? How do they walk in these heels? How do they spin? How, you know, it goes from all these different realms, from just the, you know, the materialistic part of it, like beautiful gowns, to the intelligence part. I would have those conversations with the women. If there is something like this, you know, take the time to listen to the women who've competed in these pageants, no matter where it's taken them, you know, and that's how you learn. That's how you understand, is by actually educating yourself on it.
There was a comment that was made when you were doing your amazing walk at Miss USA. It was a comment by one of the hosts that said that you were going to go to the Olympics if you weren't going to the Miss USA pageant. Or can you clarify what she was referring to?
So basically what happened was, right before I won Miss Oklahoma, I was training for Tokyo 2020. I ended up essentially breaking my leg from the amount of impact over and over again. And I actually had to let go of track and field because the injuries on top of other injuries were just becoming too painful enough to where it was hurting my spine. And that's when I decided to go for Miss Oklahoma and fully go into it, you know, not just for the scholarship part of it, but to actually win. So, yeah, I would have been training for Tokyo 2020, or at least probably been pushing myself to keep going, no matter how painful it was. But I decided to try something different and put on some heels and go compete at Miss USA.
And what was that transition like from being a D1 Olympian level track athlete to pageantry? Did you treat it like a sport?
Oh, absolutely. I was a heptathlete, so that's 7 events. And when you compete in the heptathlon, you know, you do one event, you have 30 minutes until the next, or until that last person is done competing. But no matter what happens in that event, you have to let it go to be able to compete in the next thing. So it directly relates to pageants. And as you know as well, you do one thing, say swimsuit doesn't go very well, you have to let that go and give it your all on the next, you know, and hope that you can, from there, give it your all on stage question. And if that doesn't go well, but you have another shot somehow, give it your all the next go around. So even Chesley and I, the former Miss USA, we were both heptathletes, and we talked about that. It's like, are you taking this in the same route as an athlete, like you would a heptathlon? And she was like, absolutely. No matter what happens, let it go. Go to the next thing. So it was interesting to see two heptathletes have that same mentality.
Yeah, and you guys were both in the top 3. Makes sense, the competitive nature you need to bring into pageantry to be successful. It's very apparent once you get up to that level. And like you said, all the women, they tend to have success in other areas of their life. What were some of the, you know, relationships that you forged with the other women at the Miss USA and Miss America level, because there's some perceptions that there's cattiness, and that wasn't my experience.
Mm-mm. Yeah, I didn't have that experience. As an athlete, just relating back to that, I was very, like, stay in my lane type of person, and so that's how I went with pageants as well. So I was very much to myself, but, you know, I'm not a mean competitor. Chesley and I were close, and then there were a few girls in the top five that I was close with. So if you even watch the pageant, you'll see us, like, hold hands because we were like, oh, my gosh, we're up here together. Miss Arkansas, my year, she was my roommate. We were pretty close and still remain close. And even at Miss America, Miss Washington that time, we're still close. So it's.
I think we lost you for a second. Art, can you get her back on? So for our audience, we were talking with Triana Brown. She's a former Miss Oklahoma America, Miss Oklahoma USA. And for those of you who don't know, I am a former Miss Alaska USA, and so it's been fun talking with her about what her experience is like and relating to that in from my memories as well. So we're going to bring in Cheyenne Kippenberger, and Cheyenne is amazing as well. I'm so excited to talk to her. She's a Miss Indian World 2019, but she served for 2 years. And Cheyenne, first question for you, what got you into pageantry? What caused you to run for Miss Indian World?
Well, first off, thank you so much for having me, Alyssa. It's so exciting to be talking with you. We've been following each other for a while, so it's nice to finally be able to connect off of socials. But, you know, my journey kind of getting into pageantry is interesting because it wasn't something I was always I didn't always aspire to do it as a kid. I actually always wanted to do rodeo queen when I was younger, but you know, being from such a large family, it wasn't something I was able to do. And I was in this really, really weird place with myself after I had graduated from college in 2018. And I just wasn't feeling very fulfilled. I wasn't feeling like I was on a path that was for me. And so I thought to myself, what is the most out-of-box thing that I could do? And the first thing that popped into my head was, you should run for Miss Florida Seminole. It was something my grandma always wanted me to do and encouraged me to do, but I was so against it because I never saw myself as a pageant girl. And, you know, the worlds of pageantry, you know, being beauty versus kind of native pageantry, they're just very, very different. But I think at the core of it, there's the same foundation, which is just women's empowerment. It's just giving women this platform to put the best version of themselves up there. And that kind of called to me at that time in my life. And ultimately, I ended up getting crowned as Miss Florida Seminole in 2018. And it was...
Cheyenne, we're going to have to continue the conversation a bit more after the break. I'm so excited to learn about your experience and share that with our audience. For everyone else, this is Native America Calling. We'd love to hear from you today. So call in at 1-800-996-2848. You can also reach out on Facebook at Native America Calling or on Twitter at 1-800-99-NATIVE, and we'll get your comments on the air. We have to take a short break, but we'll be right back.
Mexico celebrates Independence Day every September 16th, and the date marks the start of a decade-long revolution against Spain. The outcome forever changed the course of the country and its indigenous people, but did not put an end to colonial oppression. We'll learn more about it on the next Native America Calling.
If you're hurting in your relationship or have been affected by sexual violence, Strong Hearts Native Helpline is a no-charge, 24/7, confidential and anonymous domestic, dating, and sexual violence helpline for Native Americans. Help is available by calling 1-844-762-8483 or by clicking on the Chat Now icon on strongheartshelpline.org. This program is supported by the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center.
You're listening to Native America Calling, and I'm your host, Alyssa London. We're talking about pageants and pageant competition today with some amazing women, and we're hearing from them about how they competed and won their titles. We're hearing what goes into taking on a competition like this and what some of the rewards and pitfalls are. Please join our conversation by calling 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And before we took our break, we were speaking with Cheyenne Kippenberger, Miss Indian World 2019. She is also Seminole, from the Seminole Nation, calling in from Hollywood, Florida. Welcome back to Native America Calling, Cheyenne. You want to finish your train of thought from before?
Yes. Yeah, thank you. Yes, I remember I was just crowned Miss Florida Seminole in 2018, and it was tradition for our current reigning Miss Seminole to go to the Gathering of Nations powwow and compete in Miss Indian World. And I remember feeling so overwhelmed because I was still trying to get comfortable, you know, in my title as Miss Florida Seminole, and I was trying to kind of find my style and figuring out my platform, and it was just so out of my comfort zone because I was terrified of public speaking. I was still trying to get really comfortable in my own skin even. And probably about 9 months into my reign, I had this realization, this moment where I thought to myself, you know what? I think I can do this. I think I can go and compete at Miss Indian World. And whether I get it or not, it's just who gets to say that they ran in a pageant like that. And so I submitted my application. I started the checklist process of getting, you know, everything that was needed for me. And I remember getting to Albuquerque in April of 2019, and I was just so ready to compete. I had probably felt the most confident for anything that I've ever taken on in my life.
That's incredible. What was it? Oh, gosh, just so many more questions to ask you, but I do want to acknowledge that Triana Brown is back on the line. Triana is our former Miss Oklahoma America and Miss Oklahoma USA. Triana, you back?
Yes, I'm here.
Wonderful. And do you want to finish your train of thought, if you can remember it? We were talking about your experience at Miss USA, dynamics with the other women, meaning the friendships you forged, and I mean, just what it was like.
Yeah, I can keep it really short, too. That's a shared experience that you have with that class, you know, that no one else, no other class will experience. So you guys do remain close. We have group text messages from my Miss America group and my Miss USA group. Chesley and I were close. A few of the girls and I were close in the top five, and we still remain close to this day. We still share our experiences with each other. We still root on Chesley as she keeps going with all of her amazing accomplishments, even after Miss USA. So yeah, I think anybody who's been in pageants can really say, you know, when you have that experience with that group of women, you know, that's something that no one else knows. No one knows what you went through, not even the class after you all or the class before you. So yeah, we're still close.
Awesome. Now, tying it back into the theme of Native American women in pageantry, what is it like being Indigenous women in a pageant at the scale of Miss USA and Miss America?
It was really interesting because it still amazes me how little people know about Native American tribes just across the nation. When I went, I felt like I was having to educate a lot of people. And what's interesting is that after watching you compete at Miss USA, I looked at my mom and I was like, Mom, you know, I really think that I could take this discussion on Indigenous women and continue what she did. And it's really you opening the door for someone like myself, for other women too, to take it to a level at that magnitude. You know, the dream was to go to Miss Universe and continue to educate. But even though
I wanted you to go to Miss Universe so bad. Thank you for saying that really kind comment. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. But it's true. You know, representation is so important. And you rarely see Native American women competing at Miss USA who are truly involved in their tribes. You know, I've come across women who tell me, you know, that they are this, that they're a part of this tribe or this tribe, but I never hear them talk about it. And it's just like, you know, that is such a massive platform to be speaking on. You know, that was your opportunity. So that's why I felt that no matter what I was doing, if I was introducing myself, I was introducing myself in Chickasaw. In my interview at Miss USA, I spoke the language, you know, during the interview. And that even in the interview, they were like, what did you just say? Because one was Demi Lee, and she's a former Miss Universe, and she's from South Africa. So she knows very little about Indigenous tribes here. And so that's what the whole experience was. And I saw such a great response from people while there. And being that we were in Nevada as well, one of our events had tribes there. And I was just like, wow, this is a good sign. You know, I was having so many conversations and educating so many people, so many women, even in my class, about the Chickasaw Nation. So it was an incredible experience.
Speaking of educating people on a really global level about Indigenous culture, Cheyenne, can you tell us about your experience helping to host the Miss Universe competition? I mean, that's how it felt when I was watching it this last year. It felt like you were hosting it.
Oh, it was, I can't even say it was a dream come true, because it was never something I even dreamed of. And I remember I was like scrolling on Instagram one day, and I follow Miss Universe, I follow Miss USA, I follow like all of the larger accounts. And I had seen that Miss Universe was being hosted at our Hard Rock Casino and Hotel here in Hollywood, Florida. And I remember I immediately called my chairman and I'm like, hey, did you know Miss Universe was like here in town? And he's like, oh, I didn't know that. That's incredible. And I was like, Can I welcome her? Can I welcome her here to, you know, our reservation lands, to our homeland? And he kind of gave me his blessing, was like, go for it, girl. And so I personally reached out to the organization and, you know, I introduced myself. I had just given up my title.
You instigated that?
World. Yeah, I literally,
oh my.
I was like, I need to do this, because I really wasn't sure if anybody else was kind of aware of what was happening and how big of a deal it was to have a pageant of this scale, like right here in our backyard. And I mean, I live on our Hollywood reservation and I see that hotel. So I'm like, she's right up the road from me right now. And so I kind of shot my shot. I reached out and I introduced myself and I let them know that, you know, in true custom, you know, I wanted to welcome them here. And I felt that it was the respectful thing to do. And so by the creator's blessing, it was able to happen, and I was able to welcome not only the Miss Universe from 2019, who also served us 2 years, but I was also able to welcome Miss Australia, Miss Malaysia, and Miss Nepal. And it was really beautiful because Miss Malaysia was also Indigenous. She was the first Indigenous woman to ever hold that title. And so I did this welcoming for them, and I kind of gave them a little brief history of the Seminole Tribe of Florida, the history of the Miccosukee Tribe of Indians of Florida, and, you know, how honored I was, you know, being kind of a pageant girl as well, to have them there. And, you know, I was able to just share our side of pageantry, you know, Native pageantry. And just as was mentioned before, you know, we're not the most represented in that world, and it was a beautiful and honoring experience to be able to kind of introduce them to that and to show them, yeah, we have our own pageantry. And, you know, we get to go up and we get to go on stage and we introduce ourselves in our languages and we wear our regalia proudly. And we get to sometimes present, you know, things that are respective to our own tribes. And I ended up being able to meet the president of the Miss Universe organization. And she had mentioned that she wanted to include this like introduction that we were able to have in this welcoming. And they ended up creating this beautiful video that showed my crowning and a little bit of the footage of myself and the other title holders. And I remember they had invited me to come to the pageant on the finals night. And I remember I was sitting there with my best friend next to me as my plus one. And they showed the video and both of us just started bawling our eyes out in this audience, and I couldn't even believe it, you know. And to me, it was so much more than, you know, showing myself and Miss Indian World. It was showing our people. It was showing Native and Indigenous people that were here, that were thriving, were living. And I literally said that in my little interview portion where I told them, no matter where you go in the world, what continent, where you're vacationing, no matter where you go, there's Indigenous people there. And they've always been there. And we deserve to be recognized. And honestly, it's been yet another highlight of my very short 25-year life. But I was so proud of just the fact that I kind of found the guts, the grit inside me to just send an email and reach out. And that was what was that sparked that whole experience.
I mean, I thought it was incredible before I knew you instigated it, and now I just think that's even more groundbreaking. Triana, did you? I assume you watched the Miss Universe pageant. How did you feel when you saw Native people actually being represented in even the show opening?
That's just something that you're so proud of, because, you know, you go through that moment where if you don't win the full-blown crown, you know, you're like, man, I failed the mission that I was on. So to see that, I was literally sitting in a hotel room and was just like, oh my gosh, it's still going on. Like, this is so great. Like, you know, it kind of feels like every step people take from watching you and your just iconic gown that you had, like the transition into the gown that you had, you know, and to try to do what I did, and then to see it at Miss Universe still going on, it's like, wow, they're catching on, you know, they're understanding, like, there's a lack of representation here, so let's show the world, you know. And that's just something that you root on anyone that's Native, you know, when you see that it doesn't matter the tribe, you know, you're just kind of like, yes. And I remember my mom was just like, oh my gosh, this is so exciting.
It's amazing that we've all built on each other. And I built on Ashley Collingbull, because I remember sitting in a hotel room at some point during college, I think at like a regatta, because I did crew. And I saw that she was competing for Mrs. Universe. And long story short, the person who designed that gown that had the killer whale on the outside to represent my clan crest is the same gown designer that made Ashley Collingbull's gown. And she's the one who connected to us. So it's really cool that all of us Native women in pageantry are taking inspiration from each other and making a positive impact with that. I want to bring some other guests that we have on the line today into this conversation. We have joining us from the Hopi Reservation in Arizona, Lexi James. She is the former Miss Native American USA. Welcome to Native America Calling, Lexi.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Thank you. And when did you end up watching the Miss Universe pageant, or did that speak to you when you saw what Cheyenne did?
Yeah, we watched, my whole family, we watched the Miss Universe, the Miss USA, all those pageants. And it was really neat. I first saw it on Facebook, and then, I mean, not Facebook, Instagram, on Shai's Instagram, and then seeing it, you know, broadcasted, you know, like nationwide was amazing to see that they were, you know, paying homage to whose lands they were on and, you know, honoring Cheyenne in that way.
And what initially drew you to pageantry and to compete?
I've been doing pageants since high school. And at first, you know, they were something to do. I wasn't really sure. Holding our local high school title, and then transitioning on to becoming Miss Hopi after high school, after I graduated, was a whole new experience. I ran just to try it out. I wasn't really a pageant girl either. I was more of an athlete in high school, and transitioning into public speaking and wearing a crown was something that was really new to me. And then I realized the platform that we're given and how we're very fortunate to speak up about issues that we're passionate about and educate people on the tribes we come from, the strong lineage that we hold. And I watched the Miss Indian Arizona pageant when I was Miss Hopi, and I had that same thought I think all of us have when we're watching another pageant on stage, and we say, you know, I could do that. That could be me on stage one day competing for this title. And I did end up running for Miss Indian Arizona twice. I held the titles of attendance. And then my last year as Miss Indian Arizona second attendant, I watched the Miss Native USA pageant, and I was just in awe of, like, all of these women from different tribes across the country, you know, much like you know, Miss Indian World, how girls come from all over the world to compete. I was really inspired by them and meeting the different title holders. And I told myself, you know, that's, I remember walking out of Miss Native USA pageant afterwards. And I told my mom, we were walking out. And I said, Mom, I said, that could be me. I said, I could do that. I could run for Miss USA, Miss Native USA. And she already knew I had that look on my face. Bless my my mother and my family. They just go along when I tell them I'm running in this pageant. I'm going to try out for this one. I'm going to go for this title. And they're like, okay, you know, just let us know what we need to do. So being able to have that platform and speak to others and, you know, make connections, you know, lifelong friendships is something that we gain from scholarship opportunities like this. And I'm very fortunate to have made such beautiful friendships and, you know, consider them family. A lot of these girls have visited my homeland, have, you know, stayed in my house. You know, we've gone to events together and, you know, all of these different opportunities. So what drew me to pageants was just kind of being inspired by the women on stage and saying, you know, I could be that woman someday. You know, I could spread my message. I can educate folks on who we are, and, you know, wearing a crown isn't the baddest thing either, you know. Wearing a pretty crown no, and then a nice sash also adds to it.
And it's amazing the impact that you can have when you're wearing that crown. It just makes the little ones get so excited to talk to you, and they end up hearing your message even more. And it's amazing that you had the confidence to take that idea of that something you were drawn to and actually put the steps in motion to actually go and attain it. We're going to have to take a quick break pretty soon, but we're going to get a caller in here. His name is Ray from the Cheyenne River Nation, listening in on KIPI. Ray, what's your comment?
Yeah, hey, what I'm hearing now is, how do you say it, talent in the making. And live, I'm sitting here and sitting all of a sudden, I'm laughing, smiling, but I think that's needed. A lot of reservations where it might be like without, I was going, wow. And then to hear that, make sure that they are putting a message out, and then those kids are like, wow, I want to try that too, you know. Look at this, we got nothing here. So that's where I'm headed today. So to go in town, look around, and it goes, there should be some more. Not saying there are places that are doing that over here. They are doing a good job,
Ray,
really good job.
Sorry to interrupt. We have to go to break, but thank you. Yeah, they're amazing women on this call today, and it's incredible how they're inspiring others to go after the titles and in their communities and be an ambassador. This is Native America Calling, and we'd love to hear from you today. Call in at 1-800-996-2848. We have to take a short break, but we'll be right back.
Are you a Native American entrepreneur? Have a business solution for an issue like racial equity or critical infrastructure? The Indian Loan Guarantee and Insurance Program is a federal program helping private lenders make the business loan you need. They support most businesses, whether starting up or expanding. Information available by emailing dci@bia.gov. That's dci@bia.gov. The Division of Capital Investment supports this show.
Thank you for tuning in to Native America Calling. I'm your host, Alyssa London. Do you know a talented woman who represents her tribe to the public? That's our topic today. We're talking about pageant competitions and how it has evolved over the years and all that's involved in becoming a title holder and an ambassador for your community. Join us in the conversation by calling in at 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Now, before the break, we were talking with Cheyenne Kippenberger, Miss Indian World 2019, Lexi James, former Miss Native American USA, and Triana Brown, former Miss Oklahoma America and Miss Oklahoma USA. But to start us off, we have a caller, Bo. She's calling in from Flagstaff, Arizona, listening in on KUYI. Bo, do you have a question for us today?
Yes, I certainly do. So this question would be for all of the guests here on the line as well. And, you know, my question would be, what sort of stigma have you faced while holding your titles? And, you know, what word of advice would you share with those current/up-and-coming title holders if, you know, facing similar stigma there?
Great question. I'm going to start us off answering that and then go around to the others by asking Cheyenne to take that. Given I just watched your going away or goodbye video, I felt like you spoke to this.
Yeah, I definitely think there is stigma just in pageantry in general. There's just this general ideation that pageantry is all about looks, it's about beauty, it's about like getting on stage and kind of living this glamorous lifestyle. But the behind the scenes stuff that nobody really sees is that we work so hard, not only to prepare to compete in these pageants, and there's so many sacrifices made, not only on our own behalf, but our families, our tribes, our communities. But then once you actually get the title, there's a never-ending amount of work. You know, you're having to not only make sure that you're up to date with all the topics that are happening in the world that's affecting our specific communities, Indian country as a whole, or the world, but also, you know, preparing for every event that you have to make an appearance at. You know, every time you walk into a room, you have to carry yourself in a certain manner. And that also comes along with a platform that you have, the influence that you have with these positions. People watch you. There's little girls that look up to all of us, even young men that look up to us. And there's pressure that comes with that. But I really do believe that all of the young women on this call, we knew exactly what we signed up for, and we knew that the work that was going to go into this, and we knew that we were capable of taking those things on. And so stigma or no stigma, pressure or no pressure, I truly believe that girls who compete in pageantry, they do it because they absolutely love it. And despite there being a stigma around pageantry, there is so many great things that come out of it. I firmly believe that pageantry is founded in empowering young women and young people who compete. You're brushing up your skills on public speaking. You're learning how to, you know, navigate a room full of people. You're having to utilize a platform for good. You're creating change. And so I think, you know, whether you walk out with a title or not, there's so much that you gain within your personal and professional life.
Thank you, Cheyenne. Triana, can you also speak to the misconceptions that you may have faced as Miss Oklahoma and how you combated those? Are you there? Not sure.
Yes,
if
I'm here.
Oh, perfect. Triana? Well,
there we go.
Okay.
Yeah, I can definitely speak on that. There were some events that I think that was great how Cheyenne explained that. But I can say just from personal experience, you know, some people are surprised that you're intelligent or that you have a passion for something other than, you know, the beauty and the glam that comes from it all. My platform was Bridging the Great Cultural Divide, which is all about nurturing cultural compassion and celebrating our cultural differences. And when I would speak on such topics, people would just sit there and just eyes wide open, just like, wow, she does have a brain. And unfortunately, I experienced a lot of that, you know, people being very blunt about that too. And it just had me in shock. But I'm not sure what other people have experienced as far as their stigma. I think we all have similarities, but everyone may kind of experience something a little different. But that was what I really faced. And the only thing that I could do was educate, you know, just let them know, you know, you should probably have a few more conversations with women who compete in pageants because we are very driven. Yes, we want the beautiful crown that comes from this. Yes, that's the wonderful part. Like, that's so much fun. But there's so much that we experience, you know, and this was stated earlier, that the growth part of it all, you know, we start the journey knowing that we're going to experience something probably life-changing no matter what happens at the end. But we're in this because we do have a passion for impacting lives in a positive way.
And the crown allows us to have more of an opportunity to do that and turn some heads so that we can show our intelligence and speak about our platform. And thank you, Cheyenne and Triana, for the way that you answered that question. You both did a great job. I do want to give our fourth guest an opportunity to join in on the conversation. She's joining us from Ithaca, New York. Her name is Yanenowi Logan, and she is the reigning New York State Fair Indian Village Princess, and she is enrolled in the Seneca Nation. Welcome to Native America Calling, Yanenowi.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Thank you. So you've been likely listening to our conversation. We've all had these different experiences as Native American women in pageantry. Can you tell us a little bit about your experience as a village princess and why you don't like that title?
Yeah, so the princess that we have throughout the Haudenosaunee Confederacy is really just like it's for the fair. You know, it's not really a huge, like a huge deal. It's like a 1 week thing. You go and you dance and you speak. And every 7 years, like the nations, they switch on and off. So this year was my community's time to choose a representative. And there was a Facebook post and it was circulating and I had friends send it to me and I had my aunt send it to me and they're like, you should run, you should apply. So I did, and I was a little skeptical at first because I was like, I don't know if I want to be a princess. Like, how funny is that? Like, how funny sounding is that? And so I did anyways because I really think that there's power in holding these positions of representation for Indigenous women, and I thought that if anybody was going to do it, I wanted to do it. And so I'm also the co-vice president for the National Congress of American Indians Youth Commission. And so I thought, you know, I have a voice here and I want a voice in my community specifically. So I ran, I had an interview and it was all cultural knowledge. That was a nervous process, but I was selected. And immediately after telling my mom, we kind of thought, you know, Indian Princess is a funny name. And I don't know if that's how I want to be referenced to. I don't know if that's what I want to be called. And so I really started this campaign to transition to a more accurate and more appropriate name for Indigenous women, because I still strongly believe that we should be represented in these spaces, but maybe just more appropriately in like today's environment.
And can you share with us more why you do not like the word princess? I mean, you're the only one on the call today that has that word in their title. And so why do you think it's important that part of the of your ambassador title goes away?
Yeah, so, you know, it's not traditional to my culture specifically. The Haudenosaunee never had princesses. They never had royalty. We had chiefs and clan mothers and sub-chiefs and, you know, station chiefs and all of, you know, these gatekeepers that weren't royalty. And so I think that this was kind of a grotesque way to portray Native Americans that we embraced fully in some areas that I think is just historically inaccurate and perpetuates these stereotypes and these microaggressions. Immediately after I was awarded my princessship, I went to work and all of my non-Native colleagues were like, she's an Indian princess. And they were like, so happy for me. But it was an uncomfortable situation where I felt like, well, now they can go home and they can tell their friends and their parents that they're friends with a real Indian princess. And that just didn't sit right with me. I think that there's, when it's not a part of your culture or your tradition, I think that it's uncomfortable and it does perpetuate all of these stereotypes.
And so it caused you to feel tokenized. But what was a positive of this platform? What are some of the good things that you've been able to do with it? Because you said that you saw it as a way to be able to shine light on some of your other work.
Yeah. So it's definitely a position of honor. And I thought that, you know, it would be hypocritical of me to have these thoughts and not do anything about it. So I just immediately started writing emails up, and I actually, just a few days before I was supposed to go represent at the fair, I got COVID. I moved to school. So, you know, like it was a tricky situation where my roommate had it and then I had it. So I was moved into quarantine and I couldn't actually attend the fair and represent the way I wanted to, whether it was princess or as a representative, as an ambassador. But I still kept writing, and I just wanted my message to really be heard, because I know sometimes that the process of changing a name can be controversial and it can be a kind of tricky process. So still, though, through this,
it's important. Yeah, you found a different way to get your message out there, and it's almost like your platform evolved. Lexi, speaking of platforms, your platform was initially focused on mental health and suicide prevention. Did it stay that way, or did you expand on it as issues arose?
Specifically with this year, a lot of it was centered around COVID and how COVID has affected our mental health. And I'm also a Safe Talk trainer. I'm trained in Safe Talk and Assist. And I saw a really big rise in numbers of the calls I was getting from people in distress. And so seeing how the mental health has really been affected with COVID, you know, people not being able to go out and visit folks, people not being able to maybe go visit the parks that were closed down, whatever, even just feeling the loneliness and being in isolation sometimes because, you know, a family member has COVID or what have you. That was probably the most that I expended on it, but this platform has been a platform of mine for many years, and I continue to talk about it even outside of my reins, just because I feel that it's very something that is affecting our people across Indian country, and you get the messages every day that this is something I'm struggling with, or a friend of mine is talking about this, you know, how do I best help them? No matter what the case is, there's still those people who are struggling. And until we can have those conversations and be open about it and, you know, be willing to listen to hear and not listen to talk, I think this is something that's probably going to be need to be talked about in the years to come. So with that, I just had to get more creative on how I talked about it and how I promoted my platform. And I ended up doing a walk from one end of our reservation to the other end over the course of 3 days. And that got people talking and making up T-shirts. A local printing business, Hanyori Inc., did my printing for my T-shirts. And they were sent, you know, all over from people placing orders and just wanting to be part of the solution and want to talk about suicide prevention, suicide awareness, mental health wellness, and encouraging our people to, you know, reach out for help and reminding them that it's okay to not be okay all the time, but also remember it's okay to ask for help when you really need it and to ask for help from anybody around you and that, you know, you're not alone in these times. So that was definitely part of my platform and trying to expand
really,
on it.
It's really important work
during COVID.
I'm glad that you are continuing your platform even after the title, and I want to point that out to the audience that even though there's a misconception that these platforms are often just created just for the pageant, and for many of us, the platforms are something that we continue with long after the title has been passed on. Cheyenne, you just passed on your title of Miss Indian World, or just ended it, and it's still going to be passed on. What do you have planned next, and what do you think are the opportunities ahead of you because you held that title?
Oh, it's been bittersweet, I'll say. I mean, serving in any title, just a little part of you stays with the crown, I think. And I feel so blessed to have had the experience I had with Miss Indian World. I had such an incredible circle of support, ranging from family to my committee to, you know, friends, even like Lexi. And because of that, I feel like I was able to flourish and really, really blossom throughout my entire reign. And the connections that you get to make throughout your reign is something that continues well after you're a title holder. And, you know, when I passed on my title, or I should say when I, you know, when I returned the crown back in April, I remember coming home thinking, okay, what now? And I had went through also a self-discovery process through my 2-year reign as Miss Indian World, and I learned things about myself, like
I love doing on-camera work. I love doing things like hosting. I enjoy doing interviewing, and I loved presenting and public speaking. And I'm so grateful that that's something I've been able to continue after my reign has ended.
Sounds like there's so many exciting things coming up for you. And Triana, I know that your acting and modeling career is flourishing, and Lexi and Yananoe, it's exciting to now follow your journeys on Instagram, and Cheyenne, I've been following yours for a while, and I'm looking forward to seeing what's next. I feel like I could talk to all of you guys like all day long, or at least for another hour, but we have to end our show. I want to thank my guests today. We had Triana Brown, Cheyenne Kippenberger, Yananoe Logan, and Lexi James. I hope you have a better sense of the mental and physical stamina that goes into pageant competition. And I know that several tribes have very rigorous competitions every year to choose women who will be their ambassadors. And it was great to get the perspectives today from women who are representatives of their communities every day. We're back tomorrow with a show on Indigenous perspectives on Mexican independence. This is Native America Calling, and I'm your host, Alyssa London.
Support by Amerind, Indian Country's 100% tribally owned insurance partner. Amerind works with tribal governments and their business enterprises to provide effective commercial insurance coverage, strengthen Native American communities, protect tribal sovereignty, and help keep dollars in Indian Country. More information on property, liability, workers' compensation, and commercial auto solutions at Amerind.com. That's Amerind.com.
Smoking gave me COPD, which makes it harder and harder for me to breathe. I have a tip for you. If your doctor gives you 5 years to live, spend it talking with your grandchildren. Explain to them that your grandpa's not going to be around anymore to share his wisdom and his love. I haven't figured out how to do that yet, and I'm running out of time.
COPD makes it harder and harder to breathe and can cause death. You can quit. For free help, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. A message from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davis. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.